Chapter 15. Northumberland Street, London, Spirit Side, England, July 5th, 2017, 4:43 a.m. Shigidi was not expecting it when his eyes flew open and he sucked in a desperate lungful of air. His heart was beating so fast he could not keep up with it. An immense amount of some sort of undomesticated energy was suddenly flowing through his veins, exploding the life back into him. He felt like someone had injected the essence of a young, raging star directly into his heart. He jerked up in his seat and looked around. He was in a womb of metal and smoke and fire, but he felt no discomfort. All the agony of losing his arm was gone, replaced by a kind of abstract numbness. Glass lay scattered everywhere like lethal confetti, and he could tell that some of it was inside him too. Fragments lodged in the clay of his skin. The hard edges of the cab had yielded to forces beyond them and twisted into strange new shapes. The driver's seat in front of him was empty. He blinked rapidly, eyelids fluttering like the wings of a moth near a flame. Whether because of the smoke and the hazy heat of the flames around him, or because something had happened to him to damage his eyes, everything seemed so much brighter than it was before, like there was a lamp buried beneath every surface, like he was seeing new wavelengths. The aura of everything in London's spirit space seemed heightened. The thing that felt like a star in his chest drew his attention with an almost insistent pulsing, and he looked down at his own torso. His eyes widened with shock when he saw it. The brass head of Obanufor was broken. The face it depicted now split by a jagged fissure from forehead to cheek. Bright white light was spilling out of the fracture with such intensity that he could not actually see the edges where it had separated. He could only see the light gushing out of it like a vandalized pipeline, and he could see that the larger half was still attached to the beaded headdress. But what surprised him even more was that the plume extending from the headdress had penetrated him deeply. He took in a deep breath and felt it move with his heaving chest. "What is happening to me?" He coughed out blood and spirit particles. Some of the light was flowing into him in wide, strange arcs, like a miniature cosmic river. It reminded him of a video he had seen once, of the Aurora Borealis. Not the near stationary aurora that you get when what is left of the ancient Roman goddess blows a quiescent solar wind steadily past the corporeal Earth's magnetosphere, but the true Aurora Borealis, the spectacular display you get when the goddess Aurora is desperately trying to remind humanity of her presence and power, to reignite some faith in her followers by using an enhanced solar wind to create a geomagnetic storm. That was what it looked like around his chest, at least in the nature of its swirling motion and form, despite the pure whiteness of its color. It was a divine light show centered around the plume deep in his chest. He needed to get the thing out. He tried to pull it out of him with his remaining arm, but he couldn't. It held firm in place, almost as if the vengeful fist of Shongo, still lodged in his chest, had grabbed onto the new foreign power and did not want to let it go. "Not again. It's getting crowded in there." Shigidi wondered briefly if he'd also been able to absorb anything from this new thing in him. But then he started to hyperventilate, struggling to keep up with the growing surge of energy inside him. "Too much. It's too much." His sensory perceptions were different, but focused. It was similar to the way he'd felt just before he killed Magog with a surge of power that he couldn't control. But this wasn't just a single spike. It was perpetual, continuous, and unrelenting, and scary. He tried to weave the fear that was creeping into his mind into a vision of something more confident, more in control, but he couldn't focus. Strange and unfamiliar images flashed through his mind intermittently, like cut-ins in a movie. I don't even know what's real and what's a dream anymore. Giddy with all the new sensations, his head was floating and his heart was beating twice as fast as it ever had, just to keep his thinning blood and overstimulated spirit particles flowing. The smoke and fire made it all worse, but he barely even noticed them. He was entranced by the brass penetrating his chest and by the feeling that was invading his body when he remembered, Noma. In a panic, he realized that she was unconscious beside him, her head resting on the bright yellow armrest of the broken passenger door. Her wings were fully retracted, her shoes gone, and her dress was torn across the back and belly. Black blood and bright yellow spirit particles were running down the side of her beautiful face, her smooth skin radiantly illuminated by the glow of fire, her eyes shut tight against the world. Through the window, he saw that the giant who had chased them had dismounted his makeshift chariot. The untethered horses of Helios were fleeing, turning back in a tight circle, ready to gallop back in the direction of Trafalgar Square. Gog was approaching the wreck of the cab with long strides, each the length of a horse, his face a mask of grim menace. There was a trail of broken asphalt, skid marks, and assorted destruction behind him. Shigidi grabbed onto the plume of the headdress on the brass head of a balufon that was in his chest and broke it off cleanly with a short, sharp snap. It took much less effort than he had anticipated. Another explosion of swirling white light erupted from the point of the break. He wrapped his arm around Noma's body and jammed his shoulder into the burning cab door, smashing it out of its place, off its hinges, sending it skidding several feet away. They tumbled onto the hard asphalt road together and rolled twice, his stump scraping the jagged ground each time. He ended up on top of her and waited for pain to come. But it never did. "Wake up," he said, shaking her at the shoulders. "Noma, wake up!" The giant was almost upon them, but Shigiri's focus was on the only person in the world who mattered to him, the person he loved more than he loved himself. "Noma!" he shouted as he cupped her face with his hand, shaking her head from side to side with his blood-stained fingers. He felt a chill of moving air, like exhalation on them, but he couldn't tell if those were her shallow breaths or just eddies in the morning breeze. His fingers tingled with wild new sensations, so he wasn't sure if he was actually feeling what he thought he was feeling, and that uncertainty spiked his panic. "Noma! Wake up!" When she sucked in a breath and let out a deep, hacking cough, he nearly cried out with relief. "She's alive!" She was alive. She wasn't dead. The confirmation hit him in the chest harder than he thought possible. He knew deep down that it would take far more than a motor accident to kill her. But it had been a strange night full of unwanted surprises, and he needed to see her moving and conscious, ready to face the rest of the night with him. And now that he knew she was, all his fear and uncertainty and worry began to spontaneously distill into a singular all-consuming emotion, anger. It purified and fractionated and concentrated as it rose through him, stripping itself of all the excess emotions, of all other things that were on his mind, until it was the only thing left. Pure fucking anger. It tasted like iron on his tongue. Like blood in his throat, like fire on his skin, like lightning in his veins. There was a tightening in his chest, and in that moment, all he knew was that he wanted to hurt the giant, hurt him very badly. And then that anger took over. He didn't completely realize it when it happened. Not really. It came as a kind of a contraction in his consciousness, as though the connection between his mind and body had loosened, become less tightly coupled, like someone or something had reached into him and was weaving his action as easily as he wove nightmares in the subconscious. He was still there, still aware. He could feel the pressure of the ground and the crunch of debris beneath his knees when he stood up and stepped away from Noma as she started to sit up under her own power. He felt the grind of bone against bone when he gritted his teeth and stared down the incoming attacker. He was aware enough to be confused when a flurry of horrifying images flitted by like memories that didn't completely belong to him. Images of broken, bloody bodies piled in a heap, of machetes and spears cutting into flesh, spilling blood and spirit particles. Cut-ins. So many cut-ins. Random visions flashing. It all made him feel like he was partly possessed by someone or something else at their most bloodthirsty and vicious and powerful, yet calm. He had become a passenger in his own body, aware and observing himself from within as something else took the reins. Saturated. I'm saturated. I've absorbed too many things, and now those things are taking over. Whatever it was, he didn't fight it. As long as it hurts this bastard. Nah condition, nah him make crayfish bend. Gog slowed as he tended toward them. Shigidi saw his own feet stepping forward to meet the giant, and he watched them curiously, almost enjoying the strangeness of the out-of-body sensation. Right foot, left foot, right foot, left. When they were close enough, Gog lifted his arm to launch a punch and threw his weight forward, screaming, "You killed Magog!" Shigidi observed as the thing controlling his body calmly lifted his remaining arm, positioning it at an upward angle to intercept. His sense of time seemed to slow down as his hand went up. Even the turbulent orange skies above appeared to decelerate in their discordant display as Shigidi watched the lightning turn into a network of crisscrossing lines that flickered and morphed and shifted slowly from one point to another across the sky. Is my body really moving that fast? Or is everything suddenly slow? The two fists crashed into each other, and the world around Shigidi lost all its sound in one clean break, as if some supreme and bored elder god had just turned it off. The ground beneath them developed a network of fractures that propagated in every direction, radiating from their feet and mirroring the lightning above. He watched with a kind of detached curiosity as a luminous white, green, and blue ball of displaced spirit particles erupted where their fists met. Shigidi watched the giant's face as a look of shock and horror evolved across it, rounding his mouth, bunching up the folds of skin between his brows, and widening his eyes to saucers. Every little twitch and movement was visible as he was racked with what Shigidi was certain must be an avalanche of pain. And then the ball expanded, and Shigidi saw that the giant's hand had disintegrated into tiny pieces. An arm for an arm. Or maybe more. Gog fell back as a powerful blast scattered spirit particles, blood and bone. But Shigidi's body held firmly in place, as if resisting nothing more than a light breeze. Time suddenly seemed to regain its usual velocity. Sound returned to the world. The skies resumed their royal, thin fragments of coming dawnlight started to peer through angry clouds. The white and green and blue wave of disintegration followed through from Gog's hand to his arm and shoulder, consuming the giant like a plague of invisible locusts. Gog was only about half of himself by the time he hit the ground with a thud, screaming, or at least he was trying to scream, but the sounds were so muffled they were little more than a mewl. The giant was missing not just his right arm, his shoulder, and a chunk of his torso, but also about half of his neck and lower jaw. Shigidi sensed his feet take another two steps, coming up to his defeated foe. He stared into the giant's eyes, large and black and wide, and saw nothing but fear. Far more fear than he had ever seen concentrated in one place when he'd been the active god of nightmares. The anger in him subsided, and as it did, a sense of control returned to him. He tried to wiggle his fingers, and he was surprised when they responded. "I am still here. I can control this. I need to control it. I can end this and get us out of here." He took in a deep breath, and as he exhaled, the sense of control grew. He thought himself loose, exercising every technique he knew for manipulating the clay of his body, as he became more aware of his own will inside it, despite the resistance of the foreign power that was steering his mind. The power that possessed him was coming from his chest, where the brass head of Obanufo had pierced him, where Shongo's hand was still buried. He knew because as he pushed back against it, he could feel the tightness in his chest concentrate there. But whatever it was, he would not let it take over again. I am in control. I have this power. It does not have me. He raised his hand up to the sky, and harsh white lightning screamed down from the raging dawn sky into his fist as if it were a lightning rod. It was exhilarating, the feel of it riding his body, wrapping itself around him like a trained python at his command. More and more and more of it flowed down from above, crashing into Shigidi like he was standing in the plunge pool of a waterfall of electric discharge, and he started to wonder if he could empty the heavens in this spirit side of the city of all its power without destroying himself, if this new power in him was as potent as he suspected. Lightning continued to flow down. When he felt the power peak, he swung his hand down and let it all go, pointing his finger at the giant's shocked face to release it all. The lightning struck Gog square in the forehead, and he exploded into a million meaningless flesh and spirit particles. Spent, Shigidi fell to his knees as the fading remnants of what used to be Gog, the giant, floated around him like a field full of fireflies. I didn't lose my hand this time. I controlled it. He hung his head for a second before turning back to see Nama back up on her feet, a strange smile on her face, despite the obvious confusion in her eyes. Alistair was with her, standing in the middle of the road, his clothes ripped and charred, his face bloody from cuts. The wheel Andrillic was still in his arms, held tightly to his heaving chest, like the most precious thing in the world, and right then, perhaps it was, because they still absolutely needed to get out of there. But he could see that Alistair was staring off eastward into the distance and shaking his head softly, his eyes wet and shiny, like he was about to cry. Following his gaze, Shigidi saw what Alistair had seen, and instantly wished he hadn't. He closed his own eyes to shut out the light that was erupting over the horizon. His shoulders slumped with the weight of the realization. Too late. We are too late. He didn't know how long he had been kneeling there before Noma's hand touched his shoulder. Shigidi, my love. He opened his eyes to take in her face. She was kneeling right in front of him. And with his heightened vision, he could see every pore, every hair, every inch of her perfect brown skin. He could take in every reflection on the surface of her wet eyes, and every spirit particle that danced along her body, every puff of gas and water vapor in the breaths that came out of her nose. He could see her completely, and he knew with an unclouded clarity, free of the primal compulsion of instinct, that he loved all of her, with every atom of his clay. No matter how much damage he sustained, or how many transformations he underwent, or how many conflicting powers he absorbed that wrestled for dominance within him, clinging to the absorbent particles of his body, he loved her, and that would never change. It didn't matter where they were, or what they were doing, or what side of reality they were on. He loved this beautiful demon he'd met by chance in a hotel while trying to kill a woman for prey pay. He loved her completely and truly, and he knew she loved him too. That was all that mattered. Shigidi fell into her for a kiss as deep as a dying breath, embracing her as closely as he could without allowing the glowing tip of the headdress that was lodged in his chest to harm her. The scarf of light around his pierced chest adjusted its flow path on its own, as though it were aware, parting and shifting behind her, until it wrapped itself around them both in the shape of an infinity symbol, its nexus at his heart. When they separated, he opened his eyes and stared into hers, which were full of something like hope or determination, but less clearly defined. He held on to her, taking in the area of Spiritside London where they were now, apparently trapped. A few ghosts, deities, and assorted minor spirit entities stared at them from open windows of the surrounding buildings, but largely, the spirit side of London seemed empty. And then he saw it in the distance, almost directly in front of them, but at a slight angle. A white stone building hugging the intersection between Northumberland Avenue and Great Scotland Yard. The familiar green-white-green flag blew lazily in the morning air, and the words Nigeria House were embossed in gold above a dark plaque which he could not read clearly. He couldn't hold back the smile. Maybe we made it after all. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe we aren't stuck here forever, just yet. Norma. Yes, darling, she cooed. I think we might still be able to make it. Her eyes widened in response as she spun around. She shot to her feet like a gymnast when she realized what it was, using one hand to pull down her torn dress, which was riding up her thigh.
Alistair!
She called out, pointing frantically as she sprouted and spread her wings.
The High Commission! If that book is still in your hands, then doesn't that mean it's not yet sunrise?
Alistair looked confused for a moment as his eyes swept from Norma to the eastern horizon, to the Wirlandrillic, and back to the horizon again, as he slowly came to realize what Shigidi and Norma had already seen, that the lights in the sky were only refractions. The upper edge of the sun's disk was still not visible.
Come on!
Norma shouted.
It may be dawn, but it's not sunrise yet!
She took off, up into the air in a straight line like a rocket, and then slowed, folded her wings, and dove downward, spreading them again on the descent so that she could glide smoothly towards the building that was supposed to be their rendezvous point. Shigidi stood up and ran swiftly back to the still-burning black cab. His movement was awkward, each step almost throwing him over to one side, unused as he was to moving with his increased speed, with a new center of mass now that his arm was gone. Barely noticing the heat and haze, he retrieved the two remaining fragments of the brass head of a Banufon. His hand was smoky and black when he extricated it, but there was no other effect of the fire on his body, except a kind of tingling that was almost pleasurable. He handed the pieces over to Alistair, who had come as close as he could and was staring quizzically at the trail of light around Shigidi's chest. Shigidi gave the magician a slight shrug.
Yeah, I don't know what that is either.
They followed Norma's lead toward the High Commission building, racing the sun. At the entrance, they pushed against the thick brown door, but it didn't budge. Shigidi placed his palm on it, channeling some of the wild energy he could feel flowing through him into the reinforced wood. With a calm thought, he tried to release a little bit of the energy, suppressing the surge of images and sensations that tried to take over his body again. But it was like trying to carefully open a valve on an overpressurized gas canister. A blast of lightning escaped, and the door shattered into splinters. Alistair staggered back and almost fell over. Norma, hovering above, shot him a look like surprise mixed with concern.
Sorry, he said. No time.
They entered. The moment Shigidi set foot in the building, the images flooded his mind again, and he could not hold them back. Black and red roosters, horses, smoke, a train, yams dipped in bright red palm oil like blood, machetes, spears, men in white robes, their faces chalked over with symbols. A stagger of bloody waterfalls as high as the heavens. A giant crocodile rolling in the mud.
What are these? Nightmare fragments? Vagrant memories? Visions? I don't understand what any of this means. What is happening to me?
He blinked rapidly, and thankfully the images cleared from his head almost as quickly as they had entered. When they left, a bone-deep emotional vibration pulled at the glowing hole in his chest, like homesickness. Weak light was starting to peek into the building through the windows. The thing vibrating in his chest nudged him to move, like it was a kind of compass.
Up. Upstairs. We need to go upstairs.
Follow me, he said, as he allowed the vibrating sensation to guide him upstairs, bounding up the steps half a dozen at a time. They swept past the rows of ugly white walls and cream-coloured office doors until he felt the tug of a heavy pulse behind one of the doors. He touched it, and Alistair took a cautionary step back. Shigidi tried once again to channel more of the new power in him into the obstacle without pulverizing it. He failed, and the door exploded inward, disintegrated almost to a fine powder. Noma gave him the same surprised and concerned look, but with more intensity this time, and he simply said, "Sorry," again, because what else was he going to say that would make any sense? They entered a large empty office with a large wood-grain executive desk in the corner, and a picture of the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria hanging above it like a curious micromanager. Shigidi pointed to the center of the room where the tug of the vibration in his chest was strongest. "This is it. The connection is strongest here. So there should be a tension site or whatever you call it that you can use quickly." "I don't think I have enough time to properly anchor the particles to the sockets," Alistair protested. "The sun is almost up. If we lose the Weyland-Drillic mid-transit, we could end up in a worse situation than being trapped spirit-side."
"Just do it," Noma insisted.
Alistair nodded, tucked the two pieces of the brass head under his arm and took his phone from his jacket pocket. He drew symbols quickly with his stylus as he chanted something new that Shigidi could not really distinguish from the strange hodgepodge of words he'd used before. Light, like the one swirling around Shigidi's chest, but more well-defined at its edges. Like the beam of a powerful flashlight, erupted from the phone screen and began to pulse weakly. Alistair kept chanting as Noma gestured with her fingers and used her spirit particle pressure to remotely pry open the only window in the room. They could both see the golden edge of the solar disk peeking above the horizon, its light scattering more steadily into the maelstrom of clouds above. Shigidi's breath caught. "It's almost here. It's almost here." Alistair placed the phone on the floor and threw the sacred text of the Weyland-Drillic onto it, stepping on top of the book immediately, barely giving it time to settle over the phone.
"Get in," he cried.
Noma and Shigidi took each other's hands, interlocking their fingers, and stepped on top of the book with him, struggling for balance just as an eye of light flared beneath it, opening the breach between worlds. The light beneath them wobbled, but its borders held as they started to sink into it. The intensity of light in the window exploded just as their line of sight fell below the ground, and the eye above them began to close. Shigidi felt the familiar tingle of the wind between worlds as it blew in and took them away from the spirit side of London. And then, there was nothing. They were in a bubble of absolute darkness, absolute silence. The only thing that Shigidi could perceive was the feel of Noma's and Alistair's bodies pressed against his, the touch of their feet packed tight, almost atop one another. He tried to say something, to call out to Noma, and his lips made the motions, but he couldn't hear himself, couldn't tell if he was actually making sounds or if the sounds were just not going anywhere. He squeezed Noma's hand, grateful that he could still feel that, at least. He began to wonder if Alistair's warning had been right, if they were lost in the space between worlds, if it was indeed too late. If the sun's edge had truly risen above the city's horizon before they made their escape, if the sacred text had faded away just as they slipped out of London spirit side. What if we are lost? It was true. The only thing he could imagine that was worse than being trapped spirit side in a foreign land was this: being lost in the space between worlds. He steeled himself and focused, trying to play back the images that had been flitting in and out of his mind since the brass head had impaled him, because they had guided him before. Perhaps they would again. They came freely once he let them in, as freely as the rush of air from the other side of a shattered door. Black and red roosters. Red sand. Chains.
machetes, palm fruit, horses, smoke, yams, palm oil, lightning, bones, spears, the men in the white robes with chalked faces, waterfalls, crocodiles. What does it all mean? I don't know. I know. Are they me? I don't know. Do I?
Shigiri felt like he was teetering on the edge of understanding something profound, but being constantly reeled back, about to grasp some new realization that was always just a hair's breadth out of reach. And then he felt it, the familiar vibration in his chest, like a beacon. Home. I'm going home.